live from the Poly Market Studio in L.A. It's the Young Turks. Welcome to the Young Turks, Cenk Uygur, Kasperian with you guys. Lots of news today. Let's get started.
Whoa, okay.
How quick was that?
I'm in one of those moods where I'm okay with you like wasting time.
Oh, that is a very rare mood. And be careful what you wish for.
It is a rare mood. Okay. I'll take this gift, Cenk. We'll get right to the first story. Let's get started. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki tried to downplay the actions of progressive Representative Cori Bush in extending the moratorium on evictions. Now, of course, it expired. Cori Bush decided to protest its expiration and apply pressure to the White House to extend it. So she camped out on the Capitol steps for several nights until the White House finally agreed to extend the eviction moratorium for another 60 days. Now, Jen Psaki, White House Press Secretary, was asked about this, and here's how she responded to the question.
What role did Congresswoman Bush's protests play? A number of Democratic leaders were giving her a lot of credit for raising the issue. I know the Vice President spoke to her Monday. What role did that play in the ultimate decision of the White House to move forward with the new order?
Well, I don't think anyone could hear Congresswoman Bush's own personal story and experience and see her advocacy and her passion and not be moved by that. I know a number of members of Congress were moved by that as well. What I will tell you is that the President had a number of calls with Speaker Pelosi over the weekend. Her advocacy, her commitment to looking to see, kicking every tire, just to go back to the analogy of yesterday, to see what was possible is something that was certainly impactful and influential with the President. But I would just reiterate that the President called for the extension of the moratorium back in January. CDC extended it 3 times. We also have spoken to this over the course of the past several months, and we've been in close touch with a range of members of Congress. So absolutely, the passion, the advocacy of a number of members is something that I think everybody watched closely. But I think it's important to note that we all shared the same objective and have from the beginning.
No, I like that sandwich method that she used there, where she's like, yeah, Cori Bush. I mean, mad respect for Cori Bush. You know, she used to be homeless and people are really inspired by her story. But anyway, no, I'm gonna minimize her role because it turns out that Nancy Pelosi had way more sway. Nancy Pelosi, a real fighter for the people. And then she ends again with some platitudes toward Cori Bush, but also notes that, no, we all wanted this. Don't you get it? All of us, Democratic leadership really wanted this, Cenk. Let's all forget about the fact that literally a few days ago, prior to that press conference, Jen Psaki was the one who's like, I don't know, my hands are tied. What can we do? What can we do? Our hands are tied. Brett Kavanaugh made a non-binding opinion in a court ruling that has nothing to do with extending the moratorium. And since it's non-binding, we're gonna pretend like it is binding and refused to extend it. That's what they initially did at the White House.
Yeah, you said you had no legal authority to do a goddamn thing a day ago.
Yeah.
And then now you turn around and say, oh yeah, we were planning to do it all along. Doesn't appear that way. Okay, so that is what normal people colloquially call a lie. But of course the press is like, oh, it's a Psaki bomb, oh my God. Have we been kind enough to you, Jen Psaki? Now the most important part of this is the essence and the substance of the lie. So Biden was definitely not going to do anything about the eviction moratorium. That is why Cori Bush had to sleep outside on the steps of the Capitol because she was trying to draw attention to it and do a protest. You don't have to do a protest if your own party agrees with you. Remember, she's in the Democratic Party. She did the protest because clearly Democratic leadership did not agree with her.
Right.
So if somebody comes to me and says, hey, Cenk, I'd like to give you a Ferrari. I'm not gonna go out and protest, be like, oh no, no, no. I'm like, okay. I don't really like it, I'll sell it though. Okay, right.
So, can you imagine Cenk driving a Ferrari? Oh,
nobody can imagine that. Anyway, but you protest things, especially within your own party, if they are not going to do it, right? So, but this touches the nerve with Democratic leadership and the people in power, because they don't like to be embarrassed.
Because,
and Cori Bush embarrassed them, because it's not just Biden. Pelosi wasn't going to do a damn thing either. And we told you guys this, and this is an absolute fact. There's about 20 conservative Democrats that said they would vote no on the eviction moratorium. Mm-hmm. That's why Pelosi said, all right, let's all go home, make sure we don't vote, because we want to protect our beloved corrupt Democrats. And they work for real estate interests. And if we voted, they'd be embarrassed, because mm-hmm. everybody would know that they work for real estate interests. And our job is to protect them. And by the way, us, we also got, they just got $1 million in June from real estate interests. The entire House Democratic Caucus did. So it's all a lie. There's no real reporters. So of course, nobody asked them, hey, didn't you guys take millions of dollars from real estate interests? Mm-hmm. Couldn't that have been why Cori Bush was protesting you? Don't tell me you were all on the same team. Now again, Cori and the others are polite and wonderful, and so they don't make it as brazen as I would, right? By saying, yeah, I'm out here because I'm protesting Biden and Pelosi. But they made it clear enough, and that's why that question was asked, and that's why Jen Psaki had to lie.
I mean, other members of Congress were already on vacay. They're chilling, they're hanging out. They're not thinking about people getting evicted from their homes. You have Cori Bush literally sleeping out on the steps of the Capitol until she made the Biden administration bend to her will. And she's a junior congresswoman. She's a junior congresswoman. Just let that sink in for a second. And look, I always love to provide receipts for what we're talking about. Because while the White House seems to want to take a little bit of credit for what they did, which was essentially tell the American people no and then get pressured into saying yes, I just want to remind you of what Jen Psaki initially said in a previous press conference.
The CDC extended the moratorium not once, but three times. We made clear when we did the last extension that that would likely be the last extension because of the legal limitations.
Okay, there are no legal limitations at this moment. Brett Kavanaugh wrote a non-binding opinion in a different Supreme Court ruling. So Biden, without having to rely on Cori Bush camping out on the steps of the Capitol, could have called Kavanaugh's bluff. He could have, as the executive, as the head of the executive branch, as the president of the United States, could have extended the moratorium on his own, call Kavanaugh's bluff and let it play out in the courts, but he didn't want to do that. And then of course, I mean, then they turn around and they extend the moratorium. What happened? I mean, it's just so clear that they lied. And then finally, one woman who's thanking Cori Bush is a mother of three. This was an interview on CNN, and I want to share it with you because regardless of what the White House has to say, regardless of what Democratic leadership has to say, regardless of what the pseudo left has to say as they're harassing Cori Bush following her win, this is what real Americans are saying.
I'm just so fortunate right now. This is beyond me. You don't understand. Like when I put that up, I never thought that anybody would have reached out, especially CNN, and then to hear that a congressperson reached you. This is just amazing. I'm so thankful for that. There's people like you out there. I'm so thankful for it. Thank you so much. I'm sorry.
Kelly, you and your family. No, you and your family deserve representatives that care about you. Our country deserves to have representatives that represent. And so this is the least that we can do for you, is to step up and make sure that you get to stay in the safety and the comfort of your home while we work on other things to help make sure that your life and the lives of your children are better. This is our work. So you don't even have to thank us. This is our work. This is the least we can do.
So I love what Cori Bush did. Obviously, there's more work ahead, right? This is just really the beginning, because there's a huge problem in regard to getting the federal rental assistance money distributed to people who need it. And we'll talk about that in more detail a little later in the show. But when I watch that video, Cenk, the other thing I think about is we live in one of the richest countries in the world. And think about what those three little girls in that video are going through and how traumatizing it is to be a child and not know whether you're gonna be allowed into your own home tomorrow. We have countless children in this country dealing with that. We also have children living on the streets already, homeless children in one of the richest countries in the world. And it's beyond shameful that we've gotten to this point. But anyway.
Yeah, well, those three kids probably would have been on the street if it wasn't for Cori Bush. Think about it, you would have driven by them as you're going under a bridge. So that's what America does. And now Cori Bush made America a little bit better. She made it a more perfect union. And of course, the powers that be do not like that. So now, one more thing about Psaki's lie. And I don't care who cries about me calling her a liar, because that's what she just did. And we just proved it to you. But I'll prove it more to you. She said, oh, Pelosi's the one that actually called us and worked on it. What she's trying to do is obviously take credit away from Cori Bush. Cori Bush embarrassed them, so she doesn't want to reward Cori Bush. They're actually furious at her, right? And so she gives a credit to Pelosi and says Pelosi's the one that got it done. But wait a minute, Pelosi's the one that refused to do a vote on it in the first place. That's a fact. Pelosi's the one that recessed them for 7 weeks without holding a vote. Mm-hmm. That's a fact. Mm-hmm. So if Pelosi really wanted to do something on this issue, why didn't she just hold a vote? Oh, she didn't hold a vote and you weren't gonna do anything until you guys got embarrassed. So just keep it real on what actually happened. As the powerful, after conceding to a progressive, try to take credit away from her and give it to themselves.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's gross. And then I love what Cori said. You know, you deserve representatives. That's what they're supposed to be. They're the House of Representatives. They're supposed to represent you, not their corporate donors. And I know in America, when it actually happens, when democracy breaks out for a second, people are shocked because we're not used to it. Like, oh my God, that's an honest politician. What happened? Well, just Democrats is what happened. But last thing, on that note, when she was running against Lacey Clay, the Democratic incumbent, same thing with Joe Crowley and AOC, all the establishment folks said, oh no, you need a powerful leader like Lacey Clay. He's been there a long time, he's senior. And with Joe Crowley, oh, he's the number four Democrat, he'll bring home the bacon. And this is, your district will lose power if you elect one of these younger people here that are challenging the incumbent. Does it look like that? Do you think Lacey Clay would have slept out on the stairs there, on the steps?
Definitely not.
Do you think Lacey Clay would have said, no, not on my watch, I'm gonna fight for the homeless? He never did, he never has, he never will. He took corporate money, probably from real estate interests like a lot of the corrupt Democratic incumbents, and he never did anything. So did your district lose or gain power by having Cori Bush? It definitely gained power. So the next time that they tell you, oh, you gotta vote for an incumbent because they're gonna help your district, understand that it's the exact opposite, exact opposite. You need real fighters who are gonna fight for you and represent you, and that's what Cori Bush is.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the eviction moratorium, but more importantly, why it is that Americans who need rental relief haven't received it yet. There's a really great piece in the American Prospect about this. So while the Biden administration has finally agreed to extend the eviction moratorium for another 60 days, there's still a massive problem looming. And that massive problem is the fact that states do not have the infrastructure in place to distribute the tens of billions of dollars in rental relief money that's been allocated by Congress. Now, David Dayan writes about this in detail in the American Prospect, arguing that I call on all state and local governments to take all possible steps to immediately, by the way, this is from his piece. He's quoting what Biden said, where he says, I call on all state and local governments to take all possible steps to immediately disperse rental assistance funds, Biden declared, referring to the $46.5 billion made available in two coronavirus relief packages. Biden continues to say there can be no excuse for any state or locality not accelerating funds to landlords and tenants that have been hurt during this pandemic. But the problem really lies in the way that the legislation was written, because it's incredibly complicated, the terms are difficult to abide by, and it makes the process a lot more difficult for states that just don't have an infrastructure in place to distribute that money. That's part of the reason why in the previous 5 months in which the rental assistance was available, about $3.25 billion has been delivered to tenants and landlords. So $3.25 billion out of $46.5 billion has been distributed. So it gives you a sense of just how dire the situation is. Now, what's the problem? What's holding state governors back, state lawmakers back from distributing the money? Well, it's funny because Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer clearly stated something. While everyone was in Washington urging states to get that rental assistance money out, let me urge everyone in Washington to not delegate to the states to do a job they weren't equipped to do in the first place. That's a quote from Chuck Schumer. So he was apparently very aware of how ill-prepared states were in terms of distributing this money. And Dayan continues to write that it starts with the initial text of the first bill that included rental assistance in December of 2020. On page 2256, it states that payments of rental assistance shall be distributed to state and local governments, not through a federalized program, which I think is a huge problem here. And then on the next page, there's another curious passage suggesting that a landlord or utility provider could not agree to accept payments from a state or local government entity, and the money would have to go directly to the household instead. So the person who needs rental assistance would need to apply for that rental assistance. They'd have to qualify after proving that they're in dire need. And then that money would have to go directly to the individual applying for it, and then that individual would use it to pay their landlord. I have more details about how complicated the distribution policy is, but before I get to it, Cenk, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, so I don't think it's an accident that they delegated it to the states. I think that they didn't want all of it sent out. Now look, it's obviously a little bit of analysis here, and I don't have a memo saying from Democrats, we don't really want this dispersed too much. But think about the logic. If it's not intentional, then it was negligence. A lot of the states are run by Republicans. They're red states. You know that when you send federal money, whether it's Medicaid money or other kinds of money to the states, unemployment money, they often block it, and they won't give it to their own citizens. In fact, it just happened with COVID relief and unemployment insurance. So don't tell me you didn't know. No, you know that if you say the federal government isn't gonna disperse it, the states are gonna disperse it, that half of it isn't going to get dispersed, because it would help the average American and poor people, and Republicans have no interest in that, and they will block it at the state level.
Can I jump in? Because I think that your theory is definitely credible, and it immediately made me think back to how the bipartisan infrastructure bill is being funded. Because remember, it's a $1 trillion infrastructure bill, but roughly half of it is new spending. So where's the other half coming from? They're essentially reusing money that was appropriated for coronavirus relief efforts. So why didn't that money go to where it was supposed to go in the first place, right?
Yeah, 100%. And so, look, even if I'm not right, and it's just, we accidentally gave it to the states where, you're right, the red states aren't gonna give it to people who might get thrown out and get evicted. Well, then that's a massive mistake. That is an unconscionable mistake. Democrats, you don't yet know that Republicans in red states are going to deny any money you send to either the poor or the middle class. If you say you don't know that, you should retire immediately, because you apparently have no idea what's happening in politics.
I mean, we covered a story about some of these red states that decided we're gonna cut taxes further for the rich, and we're gonna use coronavirus relief funds to subsidize those tax cuts.
Yeah, I mean, that just happened. How could you not know that, right? And so now I get it. This is part of the COVID relief bill that got passed at the same time as unemployment, etc. But it's not like this is a new phenomenon. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, in this case, it's, and by the way, it's a combination of all those things. There's also incompetence at the state level, and there's just that it actually is hard, right? Because they have to set up a new infrastructure to be able to execute this, and they set the law so that you have to jump through several different hoops, and you have means testing.
Yes,
so
exactly.
So that all makes it more difficult. But again, if it's really difficult, then it won't go to the people who need it, who don't contribute to any political campaigns. Instead, it'll be left as a reservoir of money to be able to use on perhaps people who do contribute to political campaigns.
So I want to also talk a little more about the means testing involved, because you have to qualify for the rental assistance. And so there are what appears to be several hoops that people need to jump through. As Dayan writes, one or more individuals in the household must have qualified for unemployment or experienced a reduction in household income or some other financial hardship they can attest to in writing. A risk of homelessness as a result of past due payments must be determined. So people need to be super, super desperate for relief, and they have to apply for this in writing, which can be difficult to do for some people who might not have the resources necessary to apply for this. The household income must be 80% of the area median or below, and those under 50% should be prioritized. With that income determined, either for the, just get the money to the people. Just get the money to the people. And if you end up determining that people who didn't really qualify for that money, you know, took it, then just tax them later when they file for their taxes. Like the nickel and diming and the means testing and the delays and the bureaucracy, it's garbage. It's garbage. And look, this is, we're not talking about right-wing lawmakers implementing means testing. If it were up to them, they wouldn't provide any rental relief to begin with. But when it comes to Democrats, they fall for the same like corporate nonsense, right? Which is like, oh, well, you don't want people to like live off the government. You don't want people, you know, fraud's a big problem. No, you know what's a big problem? People getting evicted from their homes in the middle of a pandemic. That's a big problem. Get the money to the people and then worry about taxing them later if they took more than they needed. But no, we gotta do all these delays because we don't have enough homeless people in the country. We don't have enough children living on the streets. No, the lack of Democratic leadership here is beyond frustrating, beyond shameful, beyond embarrassing. I mean, they pretend to be the party that looks out for people. They don't look out for people at all. Don't apply means testing to this aid. Just don't. Get the money out there, keep people in their homes.
Now, again, let's give a contrast here. So I know what the conservatives will say, both in the Republican and the Conservative Party. Well, if you don't do means testing, the people can lie. You know, these poor people can't be trusted. You know, the really, guys, you live in a, okay, anyways, let's just say that you're one of those skeptical people. Great, well then let's use that skepticism for giant corporations as well. You wanna do that? Remember how the Fed basically printed $4 trillion in the beginning of the COVID crisis and handed it to the largest corporations in the world? Did we say, oh, well, don't give them that, then they'll become lazy bums. And we have to do means testing, and we have to do this kind of testing. No, 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 the trillions from the treasury that went to the largest corporations, they didn't do means testing,
right?
Okay, the money that was printed at the Fed, there was no means testing.
Cenk, they needed liquidity. They needed liquidity.
Okay.
Okay. American people, they don't need liquidity. The big banks, they need liquidity so they can buy shares of their own stock. You know, liquidity. That's what they need.
Of course, if you said to people, you know, people who might get thrown out of their homes, they actually need liquidity, very literally. Okay.
Yeah.
They'd be like, well, I mean, you get what? Just because people need liquidity, you're just gonna give them cash? Liquidity meaning cash, right? Yeah. Well, you did it for the big banks and you did it for the big corporations and you did it at literally billions more, trillions more. Oh, no, no, but I know, but they were really rich, so that's why we had to give them more money. Really? And isn't it amazing that the journalists in this country don't question those double standards? Great piece by David Dayan. Read them more.
All right, well, let's take our first break. When we come back, looks like we still have some federal judges on our side because Texas Governor Greg Abbott just got blocked from implementing an order that would allow for ridiculous and nonsense racial profiling. And he cited COVID as the reason for implementing this order. So we've got that story and more when we return.
All right. right, back on TYT, Cenk and Anna with you guys. Casper's got more news.
All right, let's go to Texas, where Abbott has been blocked by a federal judge. A federal judge has blocked Texas Governor Greg Abbott's order that would allow for law enforcement to pull over drivers suspected of transporting undocumented immigrants. Now, Abbott stated that he was signing that order in order to prevent COVID carrying undocumented immigrants from entering the country, which is strange because he's really not known for taking COVID seriously. He notoriously shot down the idea of a mask mandate in his state. Now, US District Judge Kathleen Cardone granted a temporary restraining order against Abbott's move, meaning it will be blocked while the case continues to unfold. The US Justice Department sued Abbott and Texas on Friday of last week, a day after US Attorney General Merrick Garland threatened to take legal action if Abbott didn't rescind his order, calling it, quote, dangerous and unlawful. So a little more detail about the bill itself and what Abbott is citing for his reasoning for it. Now, Abbott's order issued Wednesday of this week allows Texas Department of Public Safety troopers to reroute civilian vehicles back to their origin point or a port of entry, or to seize the vehicles if police suspect the driver is transporting migrants who are infected with the virus. So exactly how would these troopers suspect that there are undocumented immigrants who have the virus in any given vehicle? How would a trooper be able to determine? I don't know, Cenk. I feel like this would require quite a bit of, racial profiling.
No, I bet troopers can just see into a car and know who's a migrant or not, having nothing to do with their race or their appearance. And on top of that, they have an amazing visual COVID detector. I believe that person has COVID. They might not even be sick yet, but I can tell because they're Latino. I mean, how the hell would you know? That's the most absurd thing I've ever heard. Like if you pulled over ambulances, maybe that's more logical. Like, oh, there's sick people inside ambulances, but random cars. Okay, you're telling me you know that they're migrants, plus you know that they're sick. I just literally have no idea how you'd know that. The sick part is the part that's made up. That's their excuse, right?
Mm-hmm.
The migrant part is, I just want to pull over Latinos.
Yeah,
keep it real. And look here, I'll give you one example. Let's say a cop in Texas sees me driving one car and sees Anna driving another car. Let's go to the wide shot. Okay, so who do you think he might pull over if he's looking for Latino migrants who might have COVID?
Well, I don't know. Sometimes people say I look like a Latina.
Okay.
Which I like.
Okay.
Which I
it's
take
good.
As a giant
it's
compliment.
My guess is that more times they would think I'm a family.
Yes, you are correct about that. Yeah. No, I mean, what it does is it green lights racial profiling by troopers in the state of Texas. And I'm going to get to why Abbott signed that order in just a minute, because clearly he doesn't really care about COVID. He's been incredibly belligerent and irresponsible in regard to responding to the pandemic in the state of Texas. But a few more details about the judge's decision and the order itself. The judge, Cardone, still must decide whether Texas's move is constitutional, and her temporary restraining order is set to last until the court's next hearing on August 13th. Abbott has defended his order as necessary to help prevent the spread of COVID-19 in Texas. Hilarious. While advocates for migrants say it would disrupt federal immigration efforts and invite troopers to racially profile people. Okay, so let's pause for a second. Because while, you know, his opponents in that, you know, they say, look, it does green light racial profiling. That's not the argument that they're using in court to fight back against Abbott's order. What they are focusing on is how this could impact the federal government in transporting migrants. So that's their argument in court. US attorneys argue that Abbott's order would interfere with the federal government's ability to transport migrants between facilities. Federal officials spend over $200 million annually to employ contractors to transfer migrants and to avoid overcrowding facilities. And so the federal government is concerned that while a private contractor that they've hired is transporting migrants from one place to the next, their work can be interrupted or interfered with by cops in the state of Texas. So that is the argument that they're using in order to essentially permanently block Abbott's order.
Yeah, guys, this actually is slightly more dangerous. So it's one thing when you racially profile people. It's terrible, unfortunately, with the Republicans, we've come to expect it a little bit. You should still fight back and do all the legal recourses that you can, and they have, and that's great. But there's another element to this, which is what Anna's explaining there. The way that they would know that they were migrants and why the Department of Justice is concerned on the federal level is if they took vans or cars that are transporting migrants belonging to the federal government. At some point they got to be transported from the border to a facility inside one of the states. So now the cops do know those cars, right? So you say, oh, well, you see, that doesn't have to be racial profiling. They could just be targeting the federal government. Are you guys, like, that's insane. So state troopers are going to pull over federal officers. And what are they going to do? Pull guns on each other? What kind of insanity is this? The federal officer has the not only the right to, but the duty and the obligation to deliver those folks to the facility that he was delivering them to. He can't just say, oh, okay, I'll just hand it over to Texas, rando Texas trooper over here, right?
Yeah, right.
And the trooper says, now I got a law that says I got to take them from you. What are we going to pull guns on one another? This is insane. So, and that's what they're encouraging here.
Yeah, so I am not going to give Abbott any credit for thinking ahead and considering the potential downsides to this order. Because it's not even about, obviously we know he doesn't care about COVID. Obviously we know that he doesn't even care about the people of Texas. I mean, he received gigantic donations from Texas's privatized, deregulated energy grid, which is why the Texas legislature and Abbott himself signed into law the weakest regulations after Texans literally died during the power outages during a winter storm. So the only thing Abbott cares about is his own power and, you know, self-preservation. And he's concerned about Alan West, who's even more to the right of Abbott, if you could believe it, challenging him in the gubernatorial primaries. So what he's been doing lately is signing more and more of these orders to, you know, essentially pander to the far right so he can make a case for himself as he's getting primaried by someone who's even more of a lunatic than he is.
Yeah, because, and we've shown you the many instances of this now, there's a competition within the Republican Party to be the craziest person, the dumbest person. Because if you are, you're more likely to attract voters, not less likely. So that's why, like right now, Josh Mandel and J.D. Vance in Ohio are in a race to out-dumb one another, right? And out-fascist one another. So, you know, one will say, oh, let's ban this group. Another one will say, oh yeah, let's make sure that people without kids can't vote. I mean, it's insanity on top of insanity. Because why? Because Republican voters reward insanity, and they don't want you to be intelligent. They don't want you to do things that make sense. If they hear like, oh, you're gonna pull over random Latinos? I'm here for it. Okay, oh, you're gonna pull over federal agents and point guns at them, and they point guns at you, and maybe you guys shoot each other? Oh, that sounds like so much fun. Yes, Greg Abbott. Never mind, you know, Alan West was, yesterday Alan West was crazier than you, but now you've retaken the lead. Congratulations.
It's just, the Republican Party continues to devolve and the Democratic Party continues to be incredibly feckless. But as one of our members said, I mean, right at the bottom of the screen right now, the Democrats are ineffective by design. Look, I mean, when you look at what the role of government is in a neoliberal system, it isn't to protect the American people, it's to protect corporate interests, right? Which is why I give that comment all the credit that it deserves. Because yes, this is by design. That's why we're seeing politics devolve more and more on a daily basis. And we gotta challenge that system in order to change things. But for now, we're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, we've got Marjorie Taylor Greene in Alabama encouraging people to not only be violent, but to avoid getting vaccinated, even though she's likely vaccinated herself. We'll be right back.
All right, back on TYT, Cenk and Anna with you guys. More stories.
Just want to say my hair looks really good today. I'm gonna keep it real, I didn't have time to brush it. It's a little messy, but I'm into it.
Okay, all right, look at this. Anyway, no, normally I'm the one.
We're family, we're family.
Okay, yeah, we're fams.
We're family.
Okay, I also look acceptable. Let's move forward.
You look great, Cenk. All right, you haven't gotten a haircut yet, so not soccer star status yet.
Yes, but, okay. But when I do though.
All right. Well,
are people calling me Cenk Ronaldo Uyghur? I don't know.
I guess. All right. Yeah. Well, let's get to our next story. Unfortunately, Marjorie Taylor Greene is in the news again, but it's less about her and more about this ongoing message that we're hearing from right wingers like her. So, Marjorie Taylor Greene was speaking at a fundraising event in Alabama when she decided to encourage people at this no press allowed event to maybe use violence to respond to anyone working in the government who encourages them to get vaccinated. Let's watch.
And one more thing on that, you lucky people here in Alabama might get a knock on your door because I hear Alabama might be one of the most unvaccinated states in the nation. Well, Joe Biden wants to come talk to you guys. He's going to be sending one of his police state friends to your front door to knock on the door, take down your name, your address, your family members' names, your phone numbers, your cell phone numbers, probably ask for your social security number and whether you've taken the vaccine or not. Yeah, well, what they don't know is in the South, we all love our Second Amendment rights. Showing up on our front door, are we? They might not like the welcome they get.
Now, there was no press allowed, but that video was recorded by someone in the audience who then sent it to David Pakman, and he shared it online. And I guess I can kind of understand why they didn't want press there. They wanted to provide a forum for Marjorie Taylor Greene to spew her incredibly irresponsible and dangerous rhetoric to the people who paid literally $100 each just to be there to watch her speak.
Okay, so a couple of very disturbing things. Now, first of all, Alabama leads the country in unvaccinated people.
USA, yeah. USA.
Let's die USA. Quicker. Let's die quicker. Okay, we told you in June there was over 10,000 people who died because they were not vaccinated. Flat out, period. The rate of death for people who are vaccinated, if they get coronavirus anyway, which happens from time to time, is 0.01%. Almost everyone dying is unvaccinated. So almost everybody who dies in Alabama now is unvaccinated. So those, I'm not supposed to call them idiots. Okay, those less than intelligent folks in the audience who are like, okay, I'm sorry. But what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? Like you're in a literal death cult. Am I supposed to call you intelligent? Okay, anyways, then it gets way worse. She says, she said police state. And she said, if they come to your door, Second Amendment rights. Okay.
Is that how you greet cops if they show up to your door?
No, but she's literally encouraging them to shoot cops. I think shooting cops is a little bit worse than defunding them. But I'm not sure, I'm gonna have to check, right? And so she said, what does Second Amendment rights mean? We all know what it means. It doesn't mean, oh, I'm gonna go hunt vermin, right? It's not for hunting. And in fact, other Republicans have said, oh, I don't mean for hunting. I mean Second Amendment rights against political tyranny. So you're saying grab your gun and get ready to use it against the police state if any police come to your door. You're telling people to shoot cops. And everybody's like, oh, it's okay, it's a Republican. So a Republican telling people to murder cops is like awesome. Second Amendment rights. Oh, when a liberal says, hey, maybe we should give some portion of the funding to mental health workers who would be more appropriate in some circumstances. Oh, you hate cops. Maybe cops shouldn't shoot someone in the back if they're not armed. Oh, you hate cops. And then a Republican comes and goes, grab your guns and get ready to shoot cops that show up at your door. They're like, yeah, we love cops. Well, what? What? You're calling for their murder.
Look, I don't know how large that audience was, but if I were an Alabaman, even if I were a Republican Alabaman, I would be insanely insulted by the picture that Marjorie Taylor Greene and politicians like her are painting regarding the people of Alabama, right? Because what she's doing there is illustrating them as these like hyper paranoid, vicious people who have their guns ready the second someone knocks on their door, right?
Well,
like,
kind of is Republicans in Alabama.
Maybe I'm being naive, but I want to believe that even with all of the disagreements that I might have with Republicans in Alabama, that most of them are not that crazy, and most of them are not going to have their guns ready the second someone knocks on their door. But who knows? I mean, that's obviously me speculating. We don't have to get into a long discussion about that. I just wonder if the entirety of the Republican electorate is cool with people like Marjorie Taylor Greene painting this picture of them, that they're like these paranoid, crazy people.
No, we don't need to get derailed with a debate about that, but I think they are cool with it. They're like, yes, we are that maniacal and stupid. All right, I can't help it. Traidora wrote in our member section, yeah, what happened to Blue Lives Matter? But I love this one. Just Be Anti-Racist wrote in, breaking news, if the government comes to my door, they already know my name, my address, and hello, they already know my social security number. Yeah, how the hell did they come to your door if they don't know your address? Okay, it doesn't make any sense. By the way, the people most likely to come from the government to your door at some point is the census, right? So this poor person coming to, and they're gonna ask you for how many people live in the house, etc., because that's their job in the census. Because if you don't answer them, Alabama, for example, would lose more representatives because they think less people live in Alabama because you didn't answer the census. But these idiots are Marjorie Taylor Greene and the rest are coming out and going, oh no, if somebody shows up from the government, grab your gun and potentially murder them. So that's the current state of the Republican Party. You should make no excuses for them. They are genuinely that monstrous.
So moving over to the coronavirus part of this story, because unfortunately coronavirus happens to be a really big problem in states like Alabama. And the number of people who are vaccinated in Alabama is far less than the national average. So new cases of hospitalizations continue to climb across Alabama. There were 1,694 hospitalized with COVID-19 in Alabama on Tuesday. And that's a 73% increase in 1 week and a 206% increase compared to 2 weeks ago. The state reported 3,442 new cases in the latest data updated on Wednesday, bringing the 7-day average of newly reported cases to 2,635, a 140% increase from just 2 weeks ago.
Now remember, if anybody tries to help those sick people, murder them.
The situation is even worse if you look at Mobile, Alabama, where the virus is more transmissible. Delta variant has ravenously fed on 69% of adults who have so far ducked vaccinations. On July 26th, the county of just over 400,000 people added another 499 cases to its tally, most with the Delta strain, most all unvaccinated. The next day was another 553 cases, then 472 the day after that. And when you look at vaccination rates, they're far lower in Alabama. In fact, Alabama is tied with Mississippi
always tied at the bottom. Run by Republicans right into the goddamn ground.
In having the lowest percentage of fully COVID-19 vaccinated residents in the nation, the unvaccinated accounted for 97% of recently hospitalized COVID-19 patients in Alabama. Of the 2,379 COVID-19 deaths confirmed in Alabama between January 19th and June 30th, unvaccinated individuals accounted for 99%, according to the Alabama Department of Public Health. So again, we hear cases of breakthrough infections among those who are vaccinated, but the vaccine works the way that it's supposed to. It prevents people from getting incredibly sick. It prevents people from getting hospitalized. It prevents people from dying. That's why it's important to get vaccinated.
Or you could die just to own the libs, and then you'll feel great about it. Either way, I love our members. That's why we do the show together, tyt.com/join. To become a member and actually be part of the show. So last one is Carlson's a lying mother Tucker wrote in, so much for Southern hospitality. Indeed.
Sweet home Alabama.
Is it?
Right. All right. Well, there's one other story regarding vaccinations that I want to talk about before we end our first hour. And this one has to do with the federal government making all the wrong decisions. This week, the World Health Organization called for a temporary moratorium on booster shots in order to allow for coronavirus vaccine doses to actually reach poor countries that have really at this point struggled to get their hands on the very vaccine that entitled Americans here have been rejecting. Now, I want you to keep that context in mind because the White House has responded to those calls by the World Health Organization, and here's what they had to say.
We feel that it's a false choice and that we can do both. We announced just yesterday that we hit an important milestone of over 110 million vaccines donated to the world. So we've taken action on the global level far more than any country around the world. We're asking the global community to also step up. We saw some action at the G7, more needs to happen.
No, much more needs to happen because poorer countries, particularly countries in Africa, don't even have 10% of their population vaccinated at this point. Let's go to the second graphic here. As around a dozen rich nations begin rolling out booster shots, and I'll explain the whole booster shot thing in a second. Around 3.5 billion people across the globe have yet to receive a single vaccine dose. Of the 4.31 billion doses administered globally thus far, just 1.1% have gone to people in low income countries. So what's the booster shot about? The United States hasn't begun implementing booster shots quite yet. Europe has. And the whole idea is a third shot in order to further inoculate people and protect them from getting, you know, dangerously sick or dying from the coronavirus. The White House has decided to purchase more doses of the Pfizer vaccine in order to prepare for booster shots. But the fact of the matter is, if you're fully vaccinated as it is right now, without that booster shot, you're protected. Let's get doses to people across the globe who haven't been able to get vaccinated yet. And I think it's particularly embarrassing that we have a giant portion of this country right now that continues to spread disinformation about the vaccine, continues to pretend like the vaccine isn't important at all. And by the way, that the government has to like go out of its way to entice people with prizes and tricks in order to get vaccinated. It's embarrassing. On a global stage, that is embarrassing.
And you use the perfect word there, embarrassing. So there's 10,000 people a day dying from COVID across the world. And we're having to pay people $100 to take it because our citizens are so unintelligent and so monstrous that we say, oh, even though we have the privilege of being able to take a vaccine that the rest of the world is literally dying to get, we're not gonna take it. We're gonna make you give us money. Otherwise, we're not gonna take it. I think you've had a lot of opportunity to get a vaccine already in this country. Tons and tons of opportunity. I think we should pull all the vaccines and give it to the third world. I don't know if people use that term anymore, developing world, it doesn't matter, okay? Just give it to people who are literally dying for it. And so, look guys, you remember the story of the boat that pulled up in Florida during the Holocaust and America wouldn't take them and we sent the boat back and then a third of the people were murdered in the Holocaust that were on that boat. Well, we're letting 10,000 people a day die. That is a giant, in essence, massacre, okay? Now, it started as something natural, we think. And this disease started spreading and okay, you can't do anything about a disease. Well, but now that we have a vaccine, there is something you can do about a disease. But we're hoarding it in America and not even taking it. So everybody who had a chance to take it already took it. The people left that haven't taken it are the ones who say, I don't want to take it. Okay, good, no problem. Here. Because to me, a life in India is worth the same exact life as one in America.
Absolutely.
I know conservatives don't feel that way because they think, no, okay, they're brown, so they're not human. Or okay, you think, oh, if they're not me, they're not my countrymen, they're not part of my community. I don't care about them. I don't think their life is worth as much as mine. That's the conservative mind.
I don't think they even care about their own countrymen. Let's keep it real.
Yeah, so that's okay though. The rest of us who are decent human beings do care about other people. Mm-hmm. So look, the booster shot, I'd like a booster shot. I got a J&J one. I'd really like a booster shot. I'd rather have the shots go to other countries because it gives me marginal extra protection when 3.5 billion people have no protection. They haven't even gotten one shot, and one shot would make a giant difference. Only 1.1% got it. Look, guys, since we're in our own bubble in America, we don't see what the rest of the world sees. The rest of the world sees us as monsters who can give them life-saving medication, but instead we're letting 10,000 of them die every single day while we're not even taking it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I do want to show this video. It's from Indonesia, where it's been incredibly difficult to get vaccinated. There was one facility that was vaccinating people, and so a giant crowd gathered right in front of the building. And then once they opened the gates, take a look at what happened. So Indonesia has fully vaccinated some 8%, just 8% of the population, a fraction of the immunizations in many Western nations where rates hover around 50%. But again, you look at the United States, you look at the behavior of people who continue to practice their vaccine hesitancy, if you want to call it that. I think that's a bit of a euphemism, to be quite honest with you. And you also look at the doses that we've wasted. The US, which has wasted around 1 million doses since December, has not yet begun administering boosters. But last week, the Biden administration bought up to an additional 200 million doses of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine to prepare to offer third shots to certain at-risk individuals, including the elderly and the immunocompromised.
So look, I want to give credit for us sending more vaccines than any other country. That's good. That's good. So let's be fair and give the full context. Now, it's very little compared to the amount that is needed. But so go to the core of the issue. The American government holds the patent that allows all of these vaccines to happen. So it's not private corporations, it's me and you. The American taxpayer has that patent. We could release it tomorrow and then they would get the vaccine. Biden did a PR trick in May and said, I'm gonna do a support a temporary waiver. Now, was there a waiver of the patents? No, there was no such waiver. It just went to an international organization where the Europeans, now they have, you know how the Democrats have rotating villains?
Yes.
Oh, one day it's Manchin, the other day it's Sinema, and the third day it's Coons. And now Western countries have decided new rotating villains. So now it's Europe that's blocking it while Biden's going, golly gee, I am so concerned about that. We support a waiver. Okay, what have you done to support the waiver? Nothing. Well, you hold the patent. You could just release the patent. Well, I'm not gonna do that because that would hurt the profits of private corporations. But wait a minute, did they spend the money to get the patent? No, we did. Well, I know, but the United States government is owned by corporations. And Joe Biden is owned by corporations. So he works for corporations. He doesn't work for you, and he certainly doesn't work for those poor people in Indonesia. And so I know you could be a humanitarian and actually care about other people, but he's chosen that he doesn't care. Guys, think about how, look guys, we're risking worldwide instability, even if you don't care about other people. When the wealthy countries have 50% vaccination rates, and the poor countries have a 1.1% vaccination rate, the anger builds and builds and builds. Full, and they know we could just give it to them. Look, that thing in Indonesia was counterproductive. Everybody's just jammed together. We all see it, right? But why? Why do they do it? Because they're desperate. Because their family members are dying right in front of their eyes. And America looks away indifferently.
That does it for our first hour. We're gonna take a short break and come back with a message from a 43-year-old man who didn't wanna get the vaccine, and now he's begging Americans to do so. One of the few people who have actually recorded themselves while in the hospital. So don't miss that story. I think it's a really, really important one. And then later on, we'll talk about how police departments are literally bragging about qualified immunity while they attempt to recruit new cops. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.